Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellen.
And welcome to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy here. Doug Kellett, what a crazy week it's been, Doug.
Nothing's gone on. Nothing has happened since the last time we talked. Mike, nothing. What are you talking about there? It's just crazy is what it is. But this is an unusual presidency, and so, unusual times mean unusual talk shows, I guess, huh?
Absolutely. So it was... ever since President Trump was elected in November of 2016, the Democrats, the mainstream media, and the deep state have been trying to get rid of him. It was Russia, recession, and what was the other third? Racism. Yes, those were the three R's. And now they've added the Ukraine. And so a deep state saboteur, a CIA operative, spying in the White House, has used hearsay to put a quote-unquote whistleblower complaint together. Now the Democrats are full-blown on an impeachment inquiry. What do you make of this, Doug?
Well, I was listening to Nancy Pelosi on Friday. She, was all over the television about, where they're going with this. There's a lot of, obviously, fuss about the president's phone call. They're calling it abuse of power. The other thing, and there's probably even more focus on this, Mike, than anything else, and that is the fact that the transcript, either word-by-word transcript or the summary that we saw, was moved to a separate computer, and a lot's been made about that, whether there's a big cover-up in this. The attorney general is mentioned in that summary and the call to the Ukraine. And so they're focusing, it seems like, on that the attorney general did not, take up this complaint when the whistleblower complaint sort of moved up the ladder. He's mentioned in the phone call, and that this might be evidence of some sort of big cover-up. That's kind of what I see where we're going with this.
So they're trying to create this cover-up thing. And, of course, they have no compunction to be concerned about the 30,000 lost Hillary Clinton emails. Okay. No, we're not interested in that. We're not interested in the fact that when he was Vice President, Joe Biden, after he was named to be the point person on the Ukraine, and 2 weeks after his son, Hunter Biden, with no discernible skills, by the way, got a contract for $83,000 a month to provide, quote, advice to Burisma, a Ukrainian energy holding company. And so the Ukrainian attorney general is going in and investigating this, right? So Joe Biden calls up the Ukraine president and says, that $1 billion we're going to give you? Yeah, you're not getting it unless you stop this investigation into the company that my son is on the board of and getting, $1 million a year from. 6 hours later, and he bragged about this on video. So 6 hours later, the Ukraine says, we're not investigating these guys anymore. Now, does that sound crooked to you?
Well, here's the thing. That story's been out there a while, and it occurred during the Obama administration. I guess, some of my friends, we were talking about this. And, it never did sound good to me, but I think wasn't the Republicans in control of Congress? Could they not have maybe moved forward with something then? Or when President Trump took office, his attorney general then, Jeff Sessions, couldn't something have been done about it then?
When did that story come out? You see,
I remember, like you're talking about the video that's circulating with Biden making those comments. I remember, seeing that. Maybe it's rumors or something, again, I don't know. But my view is we investigate everything if necessary, right? I guess I'm taking the opinion sort of like I saw Tulsi Gabbard this week, one of the Democrats running for president. I think she's the only one.
Only one.
At this point. Yeah, that's not saying the president should be impeached and removed from office. It seems to me she has a reasonable point of view. See, what do you think? Is basically, look, the call's not good. It's not what we really want from a president. There have been Republicans who have said that. But it's not enough to remove him from office if this is all we're talking about here.
Yeah, well, it's not a high crime and misdemeanor by any means. And if you want to talk about due process issues, you've got to look at, well, it, it, is this... It, compare this to what Joe Biden did with Ukraine. And by the way, I think that didn't happen until, I don't think that was public until 2019, until this year.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, when what the sort of the sequence of events, was really about this information, right? I mean, so if it didn't come out till this year, then that's another situation. I'm like probably like you are. I think any wrongdoing should be investigated. I don't have a problem with that. I certainly don't think we want to stand up for any wrongdoing.
Yeah, yeah. So the Democrats don't want to do anything except take down the president, basically. And this they've used a deep state saboteur with a hearsay complaint that is, quote, a whistleblower complaint. And they're using that as the wedge to kind of create this impeachment inquiry. Now there are reports that they're going to try and have an impeachment vote. We were talking on another program with a Republican representative from Tennessee, who's Scott Desjarlais, who said he wouldn't be surprised if there's an impeachment vote in the House before the end of the year. We'll see if that happens. Then it'll go to the Senate, where it will die. And so then what happens?
That's the whole thing, right, Mike?
Yeah.
I mean, aren't we in the same position that we've been on this program, the Battleground State Report, talking about, you know, with the Russia investigation?
Russia,
it's like, okay, you can impeach him all you want, yeah, but if you're not going to remove him, is there really a point in doing that?
Yeah, you know? Well, I think that has a political backlash, and we'll talk about that more when we get back. You're listening to the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. We're here with Doug Kellett, back after this.
Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett here with another exciting episode of As the Washington World Turns.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, this program was designed really to talk about the upcoming 2020 election, right? And the states that are going to be affected.
Yeah.
And everything, and lately it's been about investigations, or, you know, soon to be investigations. And you mentioned a moment ago on the program that, you know, they may actually have some kind of vote before the holidays here. So what about that? The sort of rapid process that's going on here? What do you make of that? Apparently they're going to just focus on this Ukrainian phone call, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, this rapid movement is basically an effort to rush to judgment. I know you're shocked. It's got elements of the French Revolution to it. You know, let's hurry up and convict the guy before we actually have any evidence to do so. Let's
Is
rush it,
kind
it through.
Of like, let's wrap him up for Christmas in time, you know, for the Democrats to get him under the tree or something?
Yeah, that's what they're going to try and do. Now, yeah. You know, I think it's going to – I think it will ultimately – result in backlash, because people in America actually still do believe in fairness, right? What's fair about this when you have a deep state saboteur, you know, basically spying on the president, and then let's see how we can create a crime here. That's what they're trying to do.
You know, it's funny I'm saying this, every impeachment is different, right?
we've had one in our lifetimes, Bill Clinton.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember the attitude of people basically was, wait a minute, we elected him, we take him out. You don't get to do that. And that's sort of what I'm hearing on, you know, social media or whatever, reading on social media, is that, you know, we elected him. There's an election coming up. If you think you can have him removed from office, that's the way that you go about it, right? And so I think it's a good point you're making. Is there going to be a backlash? Let's just say that he's not removed from office, because I don't think either one of us think that's going to happen unless, you know, there's some other, you know, big thing to fall here.
Oh, they're going to try to manufacture more. There's no question about it.
But right. I'm just saying, just for the sake of, okay, nothing. I mean, okay, they impeach him because all he needs is a majority of vote in the House, but he's not going to be removed from office. Because I think a lot of people might think impeachment is removal, you know, and so
impeachment is just moving it to the Senate for a trial.
Right. So and there's almost a sure thing they're going to impeach him, right?
I would think so. I mean, yeah. I would think so. When they had a vote on moving the impeachment inquiry forward, all 231 Democrats in the House voted in favor of that. And so the problem is, for those Democrats, particularly those in the 31 Democrats were elected in districts that Donald Trump won in 2016. And so the question for those folks is, how does that play in those districts? Is this fairness? Do any of those 231 Democrats in the House, are any of them believe in the rule of law? Are any of them fair and honest? And I think looking at the evidence, you'd have to say absolutely not. They're a bunch of hardcore ideologues who are trying.
Let me say this, Mike, and you're the vote counter, and that was the point I was going to bring up, is how is this going to play, especially in those states that are sort of swing states? But if they're they're betting on the voters, right? Aren't they? They're saying, okay, yeah, I think there were a number of like freshmen members of Congress from these districts, right?
Yeah,
Democrats
31.
Who wanted to move forward with this or whatever. Yeah, so they're going to go to the voters. And the voters might vote them out. They're putting themselves on the line on this one, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I think it's going to hurt those 31 members, Democrats, in districts that President Trump won. Because if you look at the public approval ratings from Rasmussen, President Trump actually has higher approval ratings than he has for some time. And I think you're going to see this question of fairness, this question of, is this a kangaroo court that the Democrats are setting up? I don't see how you can look at the evidence and come to any other conclusion. Now, if you read the mainstream media, it's like, oh, this is awful. This is, you know, they say it's an impeachable offense. And yet they look at the standard. It doesn't meet the standard at all. Not at all.
Well, I've always thought the standard was kind of vague. Do you think it's specific? You know, high crimes, misdemeanors?
Well, you
don't have to have a crime necessarily to kick the president out, do you?
So here's the thing. And this gets back to the usurping of the authority of the American people who elected the president. That's what the Democrats are trying to do right now. There's no question about that. And we knew when the Democrats won the midterm elections and took over the House, we knew that an impeachment would be coming. They're about power. They could care less about solving the problems of the country. They're not trying to secure the border. What they want to do is they want to open up the borders. They want to have a flood of illegal aliens. They want to increase taxes. And they want to take away your guns. And this is part of that plan to do it, right? Get rid of the press.
Well, yeah. I mean, one way or the other. Well, I mean, if as far as winning the election here's the thing, though. You get Trump out of office, so you still got a Republican president. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mike Pence is sitting there. So you don't really achieve that goal, at least at this point, right? Unless you think Pence is beatable in the election.
See, let's come back to that and look at it. So, you know, looked at. And let's say I sort of changed my views on this before the Trump impeachment came up. But if you look at the issue of the impeachment of President Bill Clinton, he was impeached and not convicted in the Senate, but he like only missed being convicted by about one or two votes. But the point is that he clearly, you know, committed crimes in presidency. But as I look at it, you know, misdemeanor type things. I don't know if they were felonies, but, you know, lying about the whole Monica Lewinsky thing. The thing is, what good did that do the country to have that impeachment trial? I don't think it had any good. At that time, I would have supported the impeachment activities because of the fact that it looked like he'd committed misdemeanor crimes, perhaps.
Yeah, well, here's why I did, and it was because I thought, again, he had already been reelected. There was no other vehicle to remove him from office, mm-hmm. right? And I thought there was a violation, abuse of power.
I don't disagree with that.
No, I'm just saying that would be the reason. But in this case, and maybe this is kind of what you're saying, we have an election coming up. This is his first term, not his second term, right. and therefore the American people get to be the jury this time.
Not only that, though, if I look back on it, you know, and I have changed my view as to what the standard of impeachment ought to be, not because of the fact that it's a Republican up now, but just because look at the good of the country. He was a scalawag. Yeah, he did lie. He did commit some crimes. And it was an abuse of power. But I don't think, in my view, it should have risen to the level of an impeachable offense under Clinton's level because of the issue of the good of the country, right? And now, just politically, just think about this. Had he been impeached, we probably would have had a President Al Gore reelected in 2020.
Well, I think that's the reason.
You know?
Yeah, I think even like Fred Thompson at the time and some others who didn't go along with the conviction, I think that was their biggest concern.
And they were
not
smart. They were right. It was political. But let's go back.
Yeah, they didn't want to give Al Gore sort of a head start on this thing.
That's exactly. And again, this would give Mike Pence a head start. Now, the other question, with the political impact of an impeachment and conviction of President and removal from office of President Trump – in 2019/2020, and would that give Mike Pence a head start in the 2020 election? I don't know. And the reason being, Trump won because he's Trump in 2016. Pence is not Trump. There's only one Donald Trump. And so, you know,
there's going to be a time, Mike, when Donald Trump's not around, right? And whether it's this next time or
it'll be the 2020 or 2024, most
likely. Right. So Pence is going to get more of a personality in the next 4 years than he's got now? Or?
No, but he's a solid guy, but he's more of an establishment-y kind of guy, I guess. He doesn't quite appeal to the Trump voters, you know, the populist voter, right, who was sick and tired of the deep state.
I don't know what the mood of the Republican electorate would be if Trump were removed and Pence were running against who the Democrat candidate. What do you think it would be?
You know,
I mean, that's a really good question or point you're making, because, okay, would the enthusiasm be there, or would maybe it would, because I don't like what just happened to Donald Trump.
Yeah. High levels of anger, I think. And, of course, the other angle is you go down these scenarios. What if the president were to be, get this, what if the president were to be impeached, convicted, removed from office, and then renominated and reelected?
I don't know what to say about that. I think, like most times with Donald Trump, I'm speechless, sir. I don't know what to say.
I'm with you.
But I guess it would not be, there's no constitutional thing barring him from
there
doing
that. There would be
that,
no. Yeah. Look, a federal judge who was impeached, Alcee Hastings, 4 years later was elected to the Congress of the United States. He's actually signed up to impeach the president now. He was impeached for bribery, by the way, and they got the goods on him.
That's an interesting scenario. You should write on that. You should write an article on that.
I've written two articles for Breitbart on that. Yeah.
Oh, that is awesome. Okay.
Just filled with awesomeness here at the Battleground State Report. Back after this.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett. Doug, we're talking about the impeachment inquiry and the impact on the Battleground States.
Heard about it.
Yeah. I hadn't heard about that.
I wonder if anybody's been they'd say under a rock, I think is usually the phrase there. Has anybody not heard about it, in the last couple of days? I want to ask you, too, Mike, about Michigan, because there's been a few polls out there. The president's trailing in Michigan, perhaps. But more importantly, this GM strike that's going on, do you think Michigan's an important state, really, in the election? I think we both agree, right? And there's some thought that this is going to hurt the economy up in Michigan, and that Trump may be sort of indirectly affected by this. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you would typically think if it does hurt the economy in Michigan, it might hurt the president. But, you know, it's a very weird situation, because General Motors is actually more aligned with the Democrats than the Republicans, because they got bailed out by the Democrats, right? And a lot of folks there were sort of undermined. I mean, a lot of shareholders who actually loaned money to them got their money taken away from. It was a kind of a dirty deal there. So I don't know how that plays out. I'm kind of agnostic about the impact of that. Ultimately, though, don't you think you saw the week and the big problem the General Motors guys had is they took health care away from the striking workers, like, without notice. I noticed last week this week, actually, it's been restored. I think that strike will be resolved at some point, and I think ultimately probably won't have any impact. But I don't know. I mean, it's you see how it all plays out.
I just hadn't heard the president really say much about it. Have you or kind of get involved in it?
I haven't.
Because I was thinking that some of these auto workers, union guys, were among those that put him over the top last time. Did you think so?
I think so. You know, the bigger question to me is, how does impeachment play in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Ypsilanti, Michigan, and Columbus, Ohio? That's my question. What do you think of that, Doug?
How does it play in Scranton? Did you know that Biden is from Scranton? Has he said anything about that?
He's from Scranton originally.
I mean, I can only speculate, Mike. I don't know. I don't think impeachment plays well generally. And my experience goes back to the Clintons, as we were talking about a little bit earlier, the reaction of the people. Now, there's a morning consult poll or something that came out this week that said that the American people, that has jumped 7 points or whatever in impeachment, 43-43. Now, I don't know, you know, that that means anything. I only bring that out because that's the only thing, I guess, to gauge it at this point. you know, there would have to be a lot of persuasion to do that. Nancy Pelosi said in an interview on Friday that, you know, they're going to go to these districts, they're going to persuade the people of what the case is against the president and this and that. So if they don't have an end strategy on this, that is, again, his removal from office, what exactly are they doing then?
It's a political play. It's trying to keep the president off balance. They're trying to, you know, to win points. Yeah, to me, it seems transparently a power grab on their part. And it seems to be a lot of people consider it unfair and un-American, but that's never stopped the Democrats before.
Yeah, but didn't they feel pretty good about the election, or no? You don't think they did? I mean,
the midterms,
I mean,
did,
all the polls, whether they put their faith in polls or not, they've been kind of leaning their direction, have they not? And so why, you know, why do something risky? I guess is because to me, politicians usually don't do risky things, do they?
Yeah, but Nancy Pelosi's been driven to this by the far left, I think. Right, I think she's been driven by the far left, and she's trying to maintain control. And I don't think she necessarily wanted to do it, but now she's being forced to do it. Now, you look at sort of the midterm elections. The Democrats took control of the House of Representatives. Okay, fine. And they were at the range of polling. They were at the high end. In other words, they didn't exceed the polls, but they were at the high end of what the polls predicted. So that would be an indicator, a bellwether, if you will, of what would happen in the 2020 presidential election. Well, here's the thing. There have been a couple special elections since, and they've all been situations where the Republican candidate has overperformed. Take the North Carolina 9th congressional election, special election, in which the famous do-over election, right, in the district that extends from Charlotte, North Carolina, all over towards Fayetteville, North Carolina, that district, where, you know, there was a very narrow 905-vote victory for Mark Harris, the Republican, in the 2018 midterm election. And 905 votes is like 0.1%, basically, right? So there were some election ballot irregularities there that caused the North Carolina State Board of Elections to throw the elections out, have it over again. They had a sort of a typical sort of the prototype of the congressional candidate on the Democrat side in the 2018 midterms, which was a young military veteran who was saying he was sort of, you know, middle of the road type guy. Well, he got kind of pretty thoroughly defeated. I think it ended up being about 2 or 3 points as opposed to, you know, 0.1% by the Republican. So that, to me, by the way, doesn't augur well for what the Democrats are trying to do, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, and I see exactly what you're saying there. I think the other thing, too, would be, okay, so you go down the road of impeachment, and let's say that, nothing else comes up that would swing any Republican senators or Mitch McConnell or something to actually allow this to happen, then really all you've done is really riled up the supporters of Donald Trump, have you not? Because,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, so some states that were going for Trump anyway might go for Trump in a stronger fashion. You know, maybe those who are not for Trump, the same thing, you know, kind of reaction on the other side. But what about those middle ground states? Those, you know, again, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. You mentioned Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. I don't know. Those are blue collar towns, are they not?
So they are, yeah.
I think fairness is very important in all of this. I think if the Democrats come off doing exactly what you're saying, and that is grabbing power, it will backfire. If somehow they can make the process look like they really, really don't want to do this, but the president just forced them, I don't know if they can make that case or not.
Oh, they're pretending that they're so sad about this.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what they got to do, right?
it's a sad day for America.
Well, that was the tone of Nancy Pelosi in her speech, was it not?
Sure.
Mentioning the founding fathers and all of that, you know?
It's a
republic if you can keep it, Mike.
How you know, the old story about, you know you're a good politician if you finally learned how to fake authenticity, right?
Yeah, there you go. A little tear out of the eye kind of thing. You know, Bill Clinton was good at that, you know?
It's so sad.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to go and get some of these people who otherwise would say, wait a minute, this isn't fair. I voted for the guy. Okay, yeah. I don't like him now, and I'm going to vote him out, but you're not going to take that opportunity away from me kind of thing, right?
So the former Vice President Gerald Ford, who then became president, you know, he was the first vice president named under the 24th Amendment to the Constitution. He was named to be vice president when Spiro Agnew resigned in disgrace in 1973, I think it was. Anyways, he became vice president. And then the issue was they were considering the impeachment of Richard Nixon on the issue of Watergate. And sneaking into the offices of the Democratic National Committee and covering it up, et cetera, et cetera. So somebody asked him, what's an impeachable offense? Now, the Constitution says it's a high crime and misdemeanor. But Gerald Ford, who'd been the minority whip of the House of Representatives, said, an impeachable offense is whatever the majority of the House of Representatives says it is. And I think that's probably true. Now,
yeah, like I said, it's sort of vague and open, right? It's whatever they interpret it to be, perhaps, and decide. And so that's what, you get a majority of people to impeach. But like you pointed out a number of times, you got to have a two-thirds majority in the Senate to actually remove the president from office.
Yeah. And so the scenario, I think, that's going to happen on all would happen all this. And because the Democrats are so partisan and so devoid of reverence for the rule of law, I think they're going to just, rush through based upon, hearsay and all this evidence to hold an impeachment vote. And it may be up, may be down. They may do it before the end of the year. And if they do before the end of the year, and if they do impeach the president, then it goes to the Senate. And I think that Mitch McConnell is going to treat that trial the same way he treated the nomination of Merrick Garland for the Supreme Court.
We're not going to have it then.
Yeah, we're not going to have it. That's what I think will happen.
We're going to schedule that at some point. Get back with me on that.
We're going to schedule it the day before the election. You're listening to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett. Back after this.
Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett.
And welcome back to Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy here, Doug Kellett also with us. And so, Doug, we're kind of wrapping up the show today with our discussion of all this impeachment fever.
Will we be talking about it as much next week as we are this week? I mean, will it die down, or will the fervor be even more next week?
That's a very good question, because if you look at the pattern of the three R's, Russia, racism, recession, they do follow a cycle, don't they? Right?
Exactly. It's sort of, there's something going on. They got the president now, and then it fizzes out, right?
Yeah. Well, they're going to try to keep coming up with stuff to get the president, right? Because that's their agenda. Get the president. Russia failed. Racism failed, recession failed, and now it's Ukraine. So that's the latest bright, shiny object that they're going after. Senator Marsha Blackburn actually used that phrase to describe it, what they're doing. I think we're probably talking about it next week. I think we're talking about it for maybe the next month or so. And then it'll probably fizzle out. But, you never know. I think what they'll do is they'll come up with look, there are deep state saboteurs all over the federal government. Okay. And they'll come up with another one. It'll be a quote unquote whistleblower.
Well, the only thing it seems to me that would be in put the president in a position of being removed, and I'm not sure this would do it, but it's the only scenario I can see, Mike, and that would be, okay, there are more calls like the Ukrainian call.
Right.
I mean, that this is a pattern of conduct. The president, is withholding funds or doing something like that to get a favor from a foreign leader. So it seems to me that, are we worried that maybe there are some other calls
like
that
out there? I'm not worried about anything. I'm just watching what's happening, right?
Well, no, because, I mean, either way, that's the checks and balances of the government, right? I mean, the government's going to continue on. even if we don't like the process, right? Sometimes it's ugly. Sometimes it's messy, right?
It's totally ugly and totally messy, and that's what defines it. Especially, it's really awful and partisan and nasty and mean. And, boy, the founders would come back and say, this is what you've done with it? They'd say, really?
I've always wondered many times we had a chance to interview them on a lot of subjects. Would they really be happy about what's going on in this country these days, you think?
Well, you can try. Who do you want me to be? James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin? You can interview me about it right now.
I'll play that game. How about just George Washington? He was kind of an important founder. He was considered to be kind of a dignified guy, right?
Yeah, but
go with him?
No, we don't want to go with him because he didn't he presided over the Constitutional Convention.
It has to be someone involved like constitutionally
or
whatever,
somebody
right?
involved
the forming of the government.
Yeah, the forming
itself.
Of the government. So
okay, well, I'll play. How about
James
John Adams? I think he's one of the favorites, right? How about him? Yeah,
I'll be John Adams. Yeah,
Mr. Adams, how do you feel about the fact it's so easy to apparently impeach a president in modern day America?
Yeah, this was not what we had in mind when we put the Constitution together. Now, you know, I made a mistake when I was I proposed the Alien and Sedition Acts, and I think as I look back. After I've left the earth and looked back at my conduct, I did make a mistake, and those Alien and Sedition Acts were in fact a violation of the First Amendment. And I come to look at this and I'm saying, you know, the Constitution has kept you guys together for 232 years, and you really ought to abide by that. We really, when we put together this issue of high crimes and misdemeanors, we had something in mind that was more of an actual crime as opposed to something that we just politically don't like. That's the problem. You guys there, now that I see the French Revolution, which Thomas Jefferson sort of liked until it got out of control. I was always opposed to the French Revolution. I can see that the descendants of the French Revolution now are living in the Democratic Party in America. You know, I warned against this. I warned Jefferson that the Democrats might go a little bit crazy with this French Revolution stuff where we override the rights of the Constitution, rights of individuals. We override the Constitution. That's exactly what they're doing now. I told Thomas about this 230 years ago, and he didn't listen to me, and he should have. That's why I was right.
Well, that's why T.J. and Ben Franklin rushed back from France, right?
Exactly.
They didn't want to get hang around there. Well, I guess, sir, I would ask you about transcribing a phone call, and do you think it's really good to release it to the public? But what's that? You don't know what a phone call is? do you think the modern day technology is hurting maybe our government at times?
Yes, sir.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah. The government ought to be able to conduct some of its business in private. Because, you know, not everyone has a full understanding of the issues. And clearly that your media is doing such a great disservice. You know, during the time that I was president, there were the Jefferson's people and my people, and we had newspapers out there, and they were always filled with lies on each side. You know, I can admit that now. And now you've basically got lies on one side from the French Revolution crowd. I told Jefferson the French Revolution was bad. He didn't listen to me enough. He came to that view later. But the French Revolution now is the revolution that the Democratic Party has embraced. And it's not good for the country. I am going to pray for you guys up here in heaven. By the way, I did make it to heaven.
Yeah, well, we wondered about that, but we're happy to hear about that.
Anyways, thank you, John Adams.
I'm also thinking, too, the founding fathers didn't envision really the party system the way it is, right? Weren't they more afraid of having political parties like this?
They were for these very reasons. But again, the conflict between Adams and Jefferson just couldn't be contained. And so that's when, Jefferson and Madison, who opposed the more statist nationalist guys Adams and Hamilton, you know, they went one way and they went with the Democratic Republicans. It became the modern Democratic Party. And then obviously the Federalists became the Whigs, sort of became the Republican Party with a lot of twists and turns along the way. They didn't.
What would be Mike, what would be an abuse of power, in your opinion, that would actually be impeachable and removable? I mean, where a president actually abuses the office to the point. We talked about Clinton for a minute. We're talking about what's going on with Donald Trump. But, I mean, what would be an abuse of power that you think would be clear-cut? Everybody would agree.
Something well beyond that phone call with the Ukrainian president, I think. So, in fact, like way, way, way beyond that. I don't know. If the president, killed somebody, that would be a...
Oh, well, sure. But
bang,
you'd have
bang.
To try to cover
that up.
I'm just thinking, in the sort of role of as president, because one of the things I'm concerned about in all of this, and I don't think the phone call was good or anything, and so I don't want to be misunderstood, but I do think it was a bad precedent to set by releasing the transcript of this phone call with foreign leaders, because where does that stop?
Yeah, exactly.
Are we going to release all phone calls and everything?
The other thing that the Democrats don't care about is how utterly divisive this is going to be in the country. You're going to see basically that the talk about this cold civil war between the left and the right. It's going to intensify. If they impeach President Trump, can you imagine the reaction on the right? And what are they going to do? They're going to impeach the president, try to convict and remove him from office. Then they're going to go right to open borders, a flood of illegal aliens. You're going to have millions, tens of millions of illegal aliens coming in here. They're going to try to take away our guns. This is not going to be good for the country. It's the beginning of that. And it's not going to end well. The Democrats don't care because they want power, power, power.
But they can do that by just, beating Trump at the ballot box, right?
Well, that's within our constitutional system, and they don't really want to do that, frankly.
Rather get him out early. But again, as we pointed out, that gives Mike Pence a, a head start, and that could easily backfire as well, if it were to – I mean, a wounded Donald Trump is better to run against than a guy that's sort
maybe.
Of clear in the open Mike Pence, right?
I don't know, because this is about the two different tribes in America today, I think. And this is basically –
Did you say tribe?
I did.
Did you mean Elizabeth Warren again? Was that an Elizabeth Warren reference?
Yeah.
I couldn't
pretendian Elizabeth Warren and pretending about everything. And
by the way, I did sign you up. She's if you want to have a beer with Liz, you can go to her website. And I knew that you wouldn't want to miss out on that.
Want to have me a beer with Elizabeth Warren.
Or you can drink tea. She said, if alcohol is not, for you, she'll drink tea with you.
So here's the thing. What I want to do as part of our efforts is I do want to have – I want to interview Henry Gates, the African-American Harvard scholar who does the Ancestry genealogy show on PBS. I want to interview him, and I want to go through the genealogy of Elizabeth Warren, which, by the way, so everybody listening to, I have documented extensively writing at Breitbart. There's no documentation that supports a claim of any Native American in her background. And there's no genetic evidence. There never has been. There wasn't even an attempt at genetic evidence to support that claim. The genetic evidence that she provided in October of last year showed that she has between 1/64th and 1/1024th DNA in common with residents of Peru, Colombia, and Mexico. Okay, that's not exactly what you call Native American tribes. Certainly isn't Cherokee. And so that is far below any standard whatsoever. I mean, it's just no genetic evidence to support her claim that she is Native American ancestors.
You think she's kind of dropped that? I mean, we don't hear about that much, right? I mean, I know that Trump will bring it up in the general election and that kind of thing, but is she using that these days as in any way in her presidential campaign, you think? Or?
Well, she's trying to avoid it at all costs.
Yeah, that's what
and
I'm thinking.
Because
right?
it gets to the issue of pretendian, right? She pretends about her heritage. She pretends about the economy. She pretends about, what the Constitution says. That's the problem. It's an authenticity problem. She can fake authenticity, I think, to her far-left progressive supporters, but I think the rest of America kind of sees right through it. And I think that's going to be a problem for her reelection.
Authenticity, Mike, I somehow don't think of her in authenticity, but I do see what you're saying with the far left. I do see her as more dangerous in some ways, though, because there is a populism.
Yes, she appeals
sort of aspect
to populism.
To her, yeah, that Donald Trump capitalized on, right? There's a bit of that in her.
There is. There absolutely is, and that she's playing to that. Of course, you know, she has a plan for everything. It's a bad plan, but she has a plan for everything. So, you know.
She does tax the heck out of the rest of us to pay for everything, right? That's the plan.
I am going to go down to the reenactment of the Battle of Loxahatchee River, which her great-great-great-grandfather was part of the 1,500 American troops that basically killed a whole bunch of Seminole Indians and won a battle there. And I'm going to go down there. Maybe we'll film that a little bit for posterity. What do you think?
Yeah, why not? You know, it's worth the trip, I'm sure.
More on that later. Hey, this has been a great session of Battleground State Report. Doug, thanks for joining us today. And next
anytime.
Week, more on the Battleground State Report. We'll see what Democrats are up to. See you next week. Thanks for joining us.